everyone, and welcome to First Things First.
Wait, go back. Wait. Go back. Let's start at 6:35.
Good morning, Saint. Happy Friday.
I've already been praying. I don't release my scripture and everything.
That's the Hall of Famer,
it's
Chris
not
Carter.
That I didn't know you were there, America. I was just saying, oh, hi. We were talking, and now you're in our conversation. Uh-huh. We love having you here. We've got 3 hours of programming for you. Chris Carter, Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. Lakers might be making life a little easier for LeBron. Ooh. Kyler Murray is looking to prove his doubters wrong. CC's going off about something, but
Before we start, that's a new record, and I think it's an unbreakable record.
Okay. Yes. It was 6:30 and
you can't get off script
02 seconds.
That like, what? That I went off
yeah,
script?
Yeah, that you went off script. Like, I mean, that is...
Replay it, Nick. She doesn't know. Replay it. What you doing, Nick?
Oh, hi, everybody.
Have you met me?
Fancy you being here.
All right, Let's do television. We're going to start with Antonio Brown.
And she's a pro.
Here we go.
Of all of us.
Been doing this
for
a minute.
The most professional.
We start with Antonio Brown and his potential frigid landing spot, both realistically and figuratively speaking. Among the many teams vying for the disgruntled wide receiver services, the Buffalo Bills may actually be the front runner. Yesterday, a report came out that the Bills were, in fact, finalizing a trade for AB. Well, that was swiftly met with an Instagram comment by Brown that just read fake news, as well as other prominent reports calling the deal unlikely. Keep in mind, in Buffalo, he'd be teaming up with a quarterback who struggled mightily in his rookie year in Josh Allen. And Josh Allen, as we know, is no Big Ben. All right, CC, I'll start with you. Would it make sense for the Bills to try and trade for Antonio Brown, considering what Antonio Brown wants and what the type of team is he'd play for?
Yeah, well, from a financial standpoint, to be able to get one of the elite players at the price tag they're getting him at, and it's going to take some sweetener, it's going to take some type of signing bonus or guarantees, but most teams, they're not afraid of that, where Buffalo is. If they're going to try to give Josh Allen a chance to have a pro career, this is something they're going to have to do. I looked at the wide receivers coming out in the college draft, and they got a high draft pick at number 9. Is there one guy right there at number 9 that I think can change their offense? No. Can Antonio Brown? Absolutely. I mean, he has proven, and the type of confidence that he gives a guy, because the way he plays his game with AB, and you have someone like Josh Allen, he can throw the ball right now to him sideways, get a lot of completions, which really helps out a young quarterback. And the other thing that Josh Allen does and does well is throw the ball down the field or ad lib and throw the ball down the field, which AB being one of the best in the business as far as a deep threat. So, yes, this would be a great trade for the Buffalo Bills because, man, Josh Allen, it's on the board. Is he going to be a bust?
Right, of course.
Will he develop into a quarterback? And if you don't give him guys at an elite level to throw to, the probability of that, it goes way up.
How much does it affect the level of production you would expect from Antonio Brown that when he demanded his trade from Pittsburgh, if he and his agents, he and Drew Rosenhaus, sat down and power-ranked preferred destinations, I think it's fair to say, in all likelihood, Buffalo would have been 31st on the 31 team list, right? Like, or it's certainly in the bottom 3 or 4 spots because
joke.
Of
it was a be careful what you wish for. Right. You could end
Jenna
up in
Jenna made the
Buffalo.
Point the day that this was brought up. Jenna said, okay, yeah, you might end up in Buffalo. And Jenna spent time in Buffalo, apparently hated it there.
No, I didn't hate it.
But
it's
no,
just very
it's
cold.
Very cold. Yeah. You don't, I mean, this reminded me of Kelvin Benjamin. Remember Kelvin? Man, give me any other quarterback other than Cam Newton, and look at what all become. Oh, I looked it up this
He's
morning.
He's been a Kelvin. Couple different teams since then, right?
Yeah, well, he had 20. He's with the Chiefs at the very end of the season. His time in Buffalo went for 23 catches last season before they cut him loose near the end of the year. So, what version of Antonio Brown do you think they would be getting? Would they be getting the best version, even close to the best version of Antonio Brown, if this is a place where, because he can say what he wants, he enjoys the spotlight, and you are going to football Siberia to a degree with the Buffalo Bills, and you are going to a place where the quarterback is, while he might have some of the measurables of Big Ben, is worlds away from Big Ben.
I mean, he is not Big Ben, and it's the risk that you take. And one of my problems with AB is not that he demanded a trade, but how he went about it, how he really tore this organization down, Mike Tomlin. And he didn't have to tear Big Ben down. even though it might have been justified. So for me, when he meets with the Rooneys, they give him the meeting, they grant him and say, you know something, we're going to try to trade you. He's made a number of mistakes, but he made a mistake on that day because him and his agent should have had a list of teams that he preferred to go to and let the Pittsburgh Steelers know, I won't go just anywhere. You can't just make these type of demands when you get to the end of that trade cycle. We knew they were going to trade him before the bonus was going to come due. So now with him, would he be happy in Buffalo? No, he wouldn't be happy there. But he should have made a list for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That would have been a better way as far as trying to go somewhere where he was going to report.
As opposed to Instagramming yourself, Photoshopping yourself in a 49ers uniform and just throwing that out there. Where does this leave, Nick? Where does this leave the Pittsburgh Steelers at this point? What are their options if he says, I'm not going to play to a team? Doesn't it limit the teams that will deal with Pittsburgh?
I think Antonio, the reason, I think he has been either intentionally or just unintentionally and just naively submarining his trade value with every Instagram post, with every interview. And because of that, I think if in that meeting with Art Rooney, and it's a great point by C, if they had come to an agreement, listen, here's the half dozen teams I would most prefer. That's what I would like from you. What I will give you is I will zip it. I won't say another word. There won't be another negative mark against me so you guys can get the most value. I think the Steelers, in talking to some of the people that cover the team in Pittsburgh yesterday, the feeling that I've been told is the Steelers think he's intentionally submarining his trade value. And with that feeling, and I think the reason this report, at least these talks started, even if this report was very premature, was all things being equal, I think the Steelers would prefer to send him somewhere he doesn't want to be. This is like the opposite of a Jimmy Garoppolo situation where Bill Belichick, he needed to get as good of a return as he could get, but also really liked the guy. The guy had done his job, wanted to see the guy succeed. I think the Steelers are saying, man, you got to be kidding me now. Like, so we had Le'Veon Bell, you know, hold us hostage to, in their eyes for a year, lost him, and now we're going to lose him in free agency. We kind of lost that battle of wills. If we then also send Antonio to one of his preferred destinations when he continues to act a fool, what does that say about us? So I don't think the Bills would have to make the best offer to get him. I think they would just have to make close to the best offer, but it looks like some of the more credible reporters are saying while they were in discussions, the Bills never made a firm offer that Pittsburgh wanted.
And what you always say, CC, is that this Pittsburgh Steelers organization is not one that's going to be held hostage by a player. It's a good organization. They have good people running it, and they're not going to let a player dictate what and how that's going to happen.
Well, the optics that have come out there the last 24 months, it's time for the Pittsburgh front office to start acting like the Pittsburgh front office. Because the two-year thing, franchising Le'Veon Bell, that's not the way normally the best franchising. That's not what the franchise tag is meant for. And last year, not only the Pittsburgh Steelers, but as football fans, we got robbed of one of the great young talents where he's only 27 years old and L. Bell is not playing football. So when you look at it from a global perspective, it'd be nice for the Pittsburgh Steelers because I rant and rave. I brag about how good these teams are. New York football Giants, man, the last couple of years, I get criticized all the time for defending their ownership, defending what they're trying to do. That's because these teams have done this for a long time. I mean, they are beyond one bad decision that would change their resume or change their reputation. When you are third generation, not only did I run the team, Mr. Rooney, not only did my dad run it well, but also my grandfather ran it well. And to me, that's the respect that they've earned. They haven't lost it over the last 2 years, but it's time for them to put their foot down.
All right, we're going to take a break. Coming up, a huge trade that actually happened in the NFL. Yeah.
What's bigger, the trade you're getting ready to discuss or the font they put in there for
you? Okay, all right. You want to know something?
Hey, she don't have her bifocals. Oh, there they are.
Stop, all of you. It's Friday. Let's enjoy it. That is next on FS1. You can always check us out. Here we go. On the Fox Sports channel on Sirius XM. We'll be right back. Make a comment. Go ahead.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah. I can see the 2019 schedule. NFL ain't even ready.
We'll get to a quarterback trade in a second, but first we'll start in college basketball. Wisconsin, Khalil Iverson destroying the rim on the very first play against Iowa.
Oh, on Wisconsin. Now that's a Wisconsin highlight I can get behind. I like that. None of that Brad Davidson silliness. That's a good basketball play.
Bucks and Pacers, Tony Snell dropping Bojan on his way up for the layup.
Oh, he crossed him over, shook him down to his boots. Oh, where are you going, man? What's over there?
Bojan Bogdanović has been really good for them this year, particularly since Oladipo went down.
Yes.
Pacers still holding on to that 3 seed. Not a good game for them last night, but they're playing the best team in the NBA.
Same game. Watch Giannis drive, hits the nice spin move before throwing it down.
My God.
Great fourth quarter by Giannis. The game was could be contested. I think they were up by 12. Man, Coach Bud called a timeout. Man, he ran 4 plays in a row to Giannis. 20-point
lead. Good night.
Wrap.
More from the Bucks-Pacers. Miles Turner trying to throw it down on Giannis. Not happening.
This is going to be the closest MVP race in, I mean, maybe since Nash's second one about 13 years ago. I don't know who the MVP is. To this day, we got 18, 16 games left. Giannis makes a case, then Harden plays. He makes a case.
It's been the first time in a long time that we're going to look at defense as an aspect to build a, even up the board.
All right, let's talk a little football now. Quarterback Case Keenum.
Casey.
My guy has found yet another landing spot, this time on the East Coast with Washington. For Keenum, this will be his fifth team since entering the league. Last offseason, he was a prized acquisition for the Broncos and John Elway.
Yes, a surprise.
He was. Now, maybe he wasn't a surprise. Now he'll head to Washington for a sixth-round pick. See, what'd you make of the deal?
Man, you're talking about two teams that are desperate. Let's go with Case first. They've already made the trade for Joe Flacco. It'll be made official on the first day of the league year. So he knew he couldn't be a starter there. They were paying him starter money. They realized, like, okay, you're just a placeholder. You're not a franchise quarterback, which most people in the league, that's what they have as a scouting report on Case. And the other side, Washington, Alex Smith, unfortunately, with the surgery, everything's going bad. They don't know if he's going to play in 2019, 2020, or ever play football again. So they were desperate for a quarterback, for someone like Denver last year, a placeholder, until they can get their franchise quarterback. And the deal for which they came to, they swapped some late picks. Denver gives him a $500,000 signing bonus, decides, I'm going to pay you half your salary for you to leave out the door. All right? So Case, that's how bad they wanted to get rid of him. Washington's going to pay him 3.5. The Broncos going to pay him 3.5. And the Washington Redskins have their starting quarterback.
I love this move for Washington. Not because I think Case is a great player, but he's better than Colt McCoy. And unless Washington was going to try to get in the Josh Rosen sweepstakes, that we don't even know if it's a real sweepstakes because we don't know if he's actually...
And they'd be probably heavy competition.
Absolutely. And you'd give up certainly much more than a sixth swapped with a seventh round pick. The draft compensation is almost negligible here. And this is basically, he's not going to play for us, so we want to get at least some of his salary off our books. So we'll pay half of it, as Seem mentioned, for you guys take the other half of it.
It's not a big cap hit the way they structured it.
Absolutely right. And so they needed to do that because of how they had structured his original contract and then bringing in Flacco's high-dollar contract. For the Broncos side of it, I got to tell you, if you ask me right now, make a bet. Bless you. Who has a better year in 2019? Joe Flacco with the Denver Broncos or Case Keenum with Washington, my money would be on Case.
Really?
I think at this point in his career, Case can do more. I think at Washington last year, they were a surprisingly competitive team. They actually had a good defense. The offense obviously fell apart before the Alex Smith injury. Remember, they had their entire offensive line devastated by injuries, and they had a really good offensive line up until the midway point in the season. So for Washington, there's no risk involved in this. You hope that Alex Smith can come back in 2020 because they are paying him a ton of money.
Right.
That extension just kicks in this year. But I like this move a lot for Washington. And Denver, we'll see. We'll see if going out and getting Joe Flacco, who had been bottom of the league rated among starting quarterbacks over the last five seasons works out for him. But obviously, John Elway is a prototype. Flacco fits it. Case did not. And so that's the direction that they wanted to go.
I'm sure Elway knows what he's doing with that. Sarcasm. Let's see. Tell me what this does with Washington in the NFC East now. In your eyes, does it make them a better team going into this season?
Yeah, well, they were getting ready to get banished to the CFL if they didn't get a quarterback. I mean, does it make them better? No. This is Washington. Washington is rebuilding. I mean, it makes them a little better because Case is better than Colt McCoy, but are they a threat to make the playoffs? No. What would offensive? Who are we going to throw to? Who's going to run the ball? Their star running back last year, first round pick from LSU. He has a knee injury. We don't know what he's going to look like in his second year coming back from that knee injury. Wide receiver, who are they going to throw to? They got a nice tight end. He gets hurt. Their offensive line, they have offensive line problems every year. So, no, that's not, they're the worst team in the NFC East. And you're talking about a very, very hard division. Philadelphia, Dallas, the New York football Giants. This is the worst team in the division.
Is it not? But so over the last four years, nine wins, eight wins, seven wins. And I would say every year with some major problem, right? Last year it was a spate of injuries. The year before, I felt like there was the Kirk Cousins thing looming over him the entire time. Obviously, they need some pass catchers. The offensive line, I think, has the ability to be excellent, and we've seen that. They just lost three offensive linemen to the IR in a 10-day span last year. So Washington's been, to me, competitive based on their running game and their defense the last few years. The running game fell apart when the offensive line fell apart. They liked Geis, the kid from LSU. Like, I don't, in 2019, I don't think an ACL injury necessarily derails you. So maybe I'm a little more optimistic about their chances than you are. Like,
When you do those hits to Washington on Friday and everything, you're a little more familiar with the roster, but they have no chance of making the playoffs. When you are trying to rely on a team that it's hard pressed for them to score, you're trying to rely on, they're not going to have injuries. That's all they've ever had on that offensive line. Year after year of injury after injury. And also, they miss Kirk Cousins, those 4,500 yards a year that he used to be able to, is that good enough? They'd like to have that. Now, that was the most dependable part of their offense.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, talk some basketball. LeBron caught Michael Jordan, but can he catch Kareem? That's the discussion next on First Things First. Welterweight world champion Showtime Sean Porter defends his belt for the first time live in primetime tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, only on Fox.
Let's go, Showtime. Be a champ.
Time for us to go viral. Tom Brady took to Instagram to post the next car in his garage with Odell Beckham Jr. taking notice of the Aston Martin, commenting on Brady's picture. Waiting for mine, too. Sheesh. Brady took the opportunity to get the trade target to New England. He wrote back to Odell, come to Foxborough for a test drive.
Oh, look at this. Brady doing a little recruiting, see?
No, this is no recruiting, man. I was following it on the gram because I followed them. Them is my guys and everything. Yeah. Yeah. No, this is what happened. Tom Brady put it on there. Uh-huh. Super Bowl MVP Edelman was like, yo, bro, where's my car? Uh-huh. Then OBJ got into it. Uh-huh. But Edelman was the one talking, and then we put OBJ in.
And then Brady saw Edelman and OBJ juxtaposing against each other and said, I would rather play with. Like, come on, OBJ, come on over to Foxborough.
I don't think Tom would rather play with OBJ than Edelman.
On Sundays, he would. Maybe Monday through Saturday, it would be a different story.
Edelman got a bromance is really strong. I don't believe OBJ. He's cute, but I don't believe he can break them up.
I was just going to say, that is the best Tom Brady has looked in a very, very long time.
Tom Brady, I can't remember.
You're going to tell me that
since the combine photos, he hadn't had a bad day.
Well, I don't know. He looks pretty good.
I am going to tell you that's photoshopped.
Well, whoever
Gina
that guy was before the head.
I understand how Photoshop works. You think he and Odell were sitting in front of Gillette on the car? Right, it happened yesterday.
Now it's time for the AT&T wake-up call. He looks good. Quarterback Case Keenum is on the move again. Washington has reportedly acquired Case Keenum from Denver, and that means they are out as a potential landing spot for Josh Rosen, something that was highly speculated. Nick, where do you see Rosen landing now?
If he is traded, if I were Miami, I would absolutely try to go after him. See, where's Rosen from? What's the city's name?
Something with a beach on the end of it. Yeah, he likes nice weather.
He played in UCLA, Miami.
He's a former tennis player.
Right. A lot of these reasons why a warm weather city in Miami. Now, the AFC East, not a warm weather division, but you got half those games in Miami. Also, speaking of the AFC East, I said it earlier, if the market really falls out for Josh Rosen and the Pats could get him for one of their second or third round picks, I think him getting a redshirt year behind Brady would work. But those two teams I would peg him to if he actually is on the market.
If he's on the market, I'd love to see him go to New England. It's a perfect fit for him. If Josh McDaniel's going to be the coach once Belichick decides to give it up, which I don't believe will be anytime soon, he fits into their system perfectly. Except it's cold up there, bro.
It is cold. Yeah. It is very cold in New England.
Last night, the Thunder beat the Blazers in overtime behind a strong night from Paul George and Russell Westbrook. They scored 32 and 37 points, respectively. Nick, what did you make of the Thunder's win last night?
It was an excellent game. If people didn't see it, I think there were 16 lead changes back and forth. Nobody ever had a double-digit lead. Goes to overtime. Russ was excellent. Dame Lillard on the other side was very good as well. But Russ continues this. Since the All-Star break, he's been spectacular. All of a sudden, his shot looks not broken anymore. Now, it's small sample size, but that's the version of Russell Westbrook the Thunder need moving forward.
What I thought about the game was the intensity. You don't see that kind of NBA intensity till you start coming down the stretch. I'm looking forward to the rest of the month of March and getting into the playoffs. But, man, you saw both teams playing like something was on the line. Great game last night in the NBA.
Top two teams in the West play tonight, Warriors and Nuggets. Warriors lead the Nuggets by just a game right now. Golden State coming off their worst home loss under Steve Kerr. Kerr said the team owes the fans a strong finish in the final home stretch of the regular season. All right, CC, what do you expect to see from Golden State tonight against Denver?
I expect them to turn it on, but I expected them to turn it on a couple days ago. But typically after a game like that, after a bad interview or the exchange that they had, Steve Kerr, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, and the boys, they get it together. So this is the best two teams in the West right now from a record standpoint. Typically, Golden State likes to be able to send a message. Haven't done that much this year. I believe they would do that tonight.
And C, you've been on throughout the last couple months. I think it's a good point. What happened to the Warriors' dominating home court advantage? They already have 9 home losses this year. This would be their first time getting to double-digit home losses in the Kerr era. So that's something to watch. And this game matters for them. Like, you win this game, you're in great position for the one seed. You lose it, you're not. Go ahead.
And Steve Kerr tried to give the team a message because he thought in this last year to make it special for the fans of Oracle.
Right.
It's been less than special with 9 home losses.
Because even though they're just moving across the bay, it'll be a totally different crowd when you're in Tech San Francisco as opposed to Oakland.
On Wednesday, LeBron made history, securing 4th place on the NBA's all-time scoring list. He did it in a Lakers jersey. Hasn't exactly been the season LeBron anticipated when he joined the Lakers. Yes, he did pass Michael Jordan on his way up the prestigious list, but could he become the all-time leading scorer by passing Kobe, Karl and Kareem as well? Nick, what do you think? You think LeBron passes Kareem at some point?
So he's going to pass Kobe next year, and he'll pass Karl Malone a couple thousand points thereafter. It would be shocking if he doesn't get at least to number 2. It would take a career-ending injury for LeBron to not get to at least number 2. I would say passing Kareem is less of a sure thing now than it was going into the season. Because if you just did the math and say, okay, let's say LeBron's scoring goes down, but he averages just 24 points per game for his Lakers tenure and plays just 90% of the games, he would pass Kareem before the contract's up. He's in a position now because of the injury that he's 6,076 points behind him. At 25 points per game, that's 243 games. You have 3 more 80-game seasons. Like, okay, if he stays healthy, even if he doesn't, because you can average 25, then 27, then 25, 23, over the course
Somewhere in there.
Then he'll do it before the end of his Lakers contract, right at the end of his Lakers contract. But one more injury, see, and doesn't have to be a season ender, one more month of missed games, and he would not do it unless he signs another contract, whether with the Lakers or someone else. If he gets hurt one more time in the next 3 years, he would need an extra year extended on the back end of his career. And I don't know if he thought this was going to be his last contract or his second to last contract.
Do you think that's important to him, CeCe? Do you think that we talk about whether he's a scorer or a passer and the accolades and the accomplishments and all of it? Do you think that the scoring title is important to him, the all-time?
I don't think it's as important to him because on his way there, like it's because to me what LeBron is about, it's about winning games. And if he can happen to do that by winning a lot of games, playing 4 championships, he would take it. But I don't believe it's a real goal for him. He couldn't believe he passed Michael Jordan to get the number 4. So if that's true, then he wouldn't be able to think that he can get to Kareem. It's one of those kind of things that, man, it's less than 1% of the NBA superstars are going to be able to play that consistent for that type of length. based on Kareem, the type of athlete he was. Man, he was ahead of the curve as far as the technology, getting injured. Am I going to take my ankles? How to eat? How to train? Yoga? Like, Kareem was way ahead of the curve. So LeBron is a freak of nature, and he has incorporated all those things, the eating, the investing in his body, all those things you can do. But when you miss 18 to 20 games, it affects that ability. So, no, the most important thing to LeBron is winning another championship. It's not any other, passing anyone, because it's not going to matter. If he doesn't win another championship in the pantheon of players, I don't believe he's going to go up or down with that being the best scorer. I don't believe that those are just numbers right now.
And I do not think LeBron has this number circled as this is one of my career goals. I'm sure he'd like to get there. And I, by the way, I think he will get there. I think he'll average more than 25 a game over the next couple years at least. And I don't think the one injury means he's now all of a sudden going to become an injury
player. It becomes harder if they add a young superstar.
Yeah.
If they add Anthony Davis, because Anthony Davis should score 27 to 30 points.
And the lowest scoring of his career, other than his rookie year, were those Miami years when he had the most talent around him. But what I don't think LeBron would do is hang on an extra year just to go get this. Like, if he doesn't have it by the end of this Lakers
contract, he'll make up some other excuse. I just want to play. I mean, just because most guys at the end, like, we're not seeing their best, but if they want to play, like, man, this guy's been so good, he should continue to play.
I don't think that'd be an excuse. I think if he still wants to play, he'll
do it. Well, it's not an excuse just saying I want to play.
Right, that's my point.
I mean, people will always say LeBron, because if they're not competing for championships, they will say he's only out there trying to compile stats.
And I don't feel that way about Dirk right now. Like, I don't think Dirk's just, because Dirk can catch Wilt, by the way, to move into the top six at the very end of the season. I think people look at Dirk and say, he's not doing it because he wants to move up the scoring list. He's doing it because he wants to keep playing. I don't think LeBron will hold on an extra year for this. Maybe he holds on an extra couple years at the end just because he wants to keep playing.
Well, or to play with his son,
anything like that. But I think passing Jordan, it was clear, was very important to him, became important to him. I don't think passing Kareem was one of the things I've got to do it. I think he will do it, but I don't think it's something that he had circled I have to do in my career.
All right, let's move on and talk some Kyler Murray. It was announced yesterday that Kyler will be participating in his Oklahoma Pro Day on March 13th. He'll run the 40-yard dash. He'll go through passing drills. He will also be remeasured and weighed again, perhaps a response to the recent bad press. CC, does Kyler have anything else to prove at this point?
Well, first tell me what are his accolades. Tell me what he's done in pro football.
Well, and nothing. None of these guys.
Oh, okay. So he hadn't proved anything. So he's got everything to prove. Like, we don't know what kind of football player he's going to be in pro football. Like, are we just saying, oh, he's great because he won the Heisman Trophy? Because I can give you a list of a bunch, not a small handful, of a bunch of guys that won the Heisman Trophy, but in pro football, they were not good football players. So now, every time, because he decided at the combine, when the NFL calls, man, when you got talent, it's time to show them that talent. So he's got everything to prove because he has done nothing as far as the NFL. There's a lot of things that go on in NFL locker rooms, but one things that the veterans tell the young guys, I don't care what your resume was in college. Don't be mentioning it around here because it doesn't mean anything. What you did in the Big 12, man, it don't matter. What you did against Alabama, it don't matter. You ain't gonna have your Heisman Trophy sitting up in your locker. So he's got a lot to prove. I believe that at the pro day, there's a couple things that people should see. I want to see his weight first. And you want to see how different is his weight now that he's gotten away from his training regimen when he was trying to add bulk? You know, how much did it fluctuate? And if I'm the team that's going to watch him, I have another private workout, and I'm going to measure him there. So I have the combine, I'll have his pro day, and I'll also have when I take him through a private workout. This is a job interview for one of the best jobs in the world. And if people wouldn't think that there would be some type of scrutiny, if there wouldn't be some type of parameters that are certain things that you need to do, there's certain color suits that you wear to a suit. Wear to an interview. There's certain ways you wear your hair. There's certain lack of jewelry that you're going to wear to a interview. This is a job interview. It's the most important job interview that he's going to ever have. So, yes, he does need to prove. I need to see him run the 40. I want to see, does he have football speed or does he have football and track speed? because that's very, very important to me. So those are the things that I really need to see are important. He throws the football accurate, so I'm not worried about that. So I'm not worried about his arm. I'm not worried about that. But his 40-yard dash, his weight, those are two things that are very, very important to
me. We were talking before the show because about the difference between whether or not you're going to work out at the combine, go through the drills, and the pro day being a totally different story. Like, you had no problem with him not doing any of the combine stuff. I was worried for his case that it was going to come out the way it did, that the only thing that came out of the combine was negative interview stuff and not him reminding people, I'm a great thrower of the football. But you said you think it would have been unprecedented for a guy to not do stuff at the combine and then also say, there are a few drills at my pro day I'm not going to do. Like, it would be a total departure from the norm for him to say, at my pro day, I'm only doing 1, 2, 3 instead of 1 through 7.
He would drop on a lot of teams. Teams would take him off the board if he made that stance. It would be an idiotic stance by him and or his whoever's representing them. And I'm getting sick and tired of people trying to make athletes like there's some shortcut. Like, we're going to stop this process that we've been doing. We've been developing players, the combine, the pro day. It's a process that's not perfect, but it's a process that's proven. And Kyler Murray nor any other young prospect is not good enough to skip each one of those stages. It becomes very, very important. It becomes very important, in shorts, that I can work out why the NFL is watching and I can show them my talent. And we shouldn't make those changes to the system for any one player, Kyler, nor any other player that I've seen.
And the top-rated quarterbacks, one of the reasons they don't always throw at the combine is because it's with guys you're not familiar with. It's right. In a setting you're unfamiliar with. The pro day is a normalized setting. You are on your campus. You are with your guys. You can set it up exactly the way you want to. So for a guy who nobody has questioned his accuracy, right? Nobody has questioned his throwing ability. It is important that he does well in that regard. Now, I know you're not concerned about it. I'm not concerned about that part of his game either. But after, there's questions about his height. We'll see if the weight stays there. There were questions, even if they were unfair, about the interview stuff. If he has an off day throwing the football, that would compound his situation negatively. What he needs is what I think he's going to get, which is to remind everyone, this is how I won the Heisman Trophy.
This is the thing that's important. And people don't realize this because people don't expect greatness out of themselves. If you are going to be great, every time I show up, you're getting ready to see a great result. And for us to think that Kyler should, that he should be afraid of this workout, no, he shouldn't. And we should have the same demands on him that we've had on the other players. He's got everything to prove because in our eyes, he's done nothing. And when he gets in that NFL locker room, that's the way NFL players are going to treat him.
And we should mention, he is going to participate fully at the pro day, correct?
He's going to do everything.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, the latest on Antonio Brown. That is ahead on First Things First. Here, First Things First, FS1 NBA insider, all-around fun guy, Chris Broussard joins the show.
Good to see you.
Great to be here once again.
Good conversation.
Enjoying the week. Yes.
All right, let's do it. Let's talk OKC, the Thunder. Last night, they double-handedly took down the Portland Trailblazers in overtime, double because Russ Westbrook and Paul George combined for 69 points. Right now, OKC, Broussard, is sitting in the third seed out west. Are you buying them as a threat in the Western Conference?
I like OKC a lot. I think they're the third best team in the conference behind Golden State and Houston. I think Houston's the only real legitimate threat to the Warriors in the West. I think the thing about OKC, they can overwhelm you with their athleticism. You know, and they're like Paul George, Russell Westbrook, Terrence Ferguson, even Jeremy Grant. They used to do that to San Antonio when they had KD. Mm-hmm. They were always a problem for the Spurs because of their length and athleticism. But look, they couldn't beat Golden State with KD, who as great as Paul George is playing, KD is better. And when Golden State didn't have KD. So I can't see them beating them. Great year. Russ has really matured. He still obviously takes too many three-point shots, makes the bad decision here and there. But as far as facilitating, he's gotten much better. And guys like Steven Adams, Jeremy Grant, Dennis Schroeder, and Paul George are having career or near-career years because of it. But I just could not see them beating Golden State.
But they might not. If you think Houston's the only legitimate threat to Golden State right now, that
could
would be
beat them.
You think Houston could beat Golden State?
Possibly. Yeah, right. I would pick Golden State, but yeah, I think Houston could.
So the point I'm making is right now, Golden State Houston would be the 1-4.
Right.
And so tell me if I'm wrong, Oklahoma City could beat Houston. Like, Oklahoma City could make the NBA Finals without ever having to play Golden State.
Right.
Like, that's why, to me, that win last night was so important. You saw the playoff intensity. We talked about it earlier, almost 24 lead changes, game tied over 12 times. It was never a lead greater than 8 points. Because what Oklahoma City does not want, if they lost, they'd be basically flip-flopped with Portland in the standings. They would be looking at Houston in round one. And you stay at the 3 line, you avoid Golden State, assuming they stay at the 1 line. Like, there's a lot of machinations there.
Right.
But I am so impressed with what Russ has done over the last 9 games. Russ, from the game before the All-Star break to now, I don't know if it's sustainable, but what he's done is he went back to his MVP season shooting-wise. Like, show what Russ was the first almost 50 games of the year. The most important line are those percentages. So 41% from the field and 24% from three, while averaging 21 points first 48 games of the year. Since then, the assists are down, but the scoring is way up thanks to the fact that he's went from horrific three-point shooter to decent, and that also elevated his regular field goal shooting. If Russ can play near this level moving forward with the level Paul George is at, this is an incredibly dangerous team in my eyes.
Also Paul George, which is the one thing you've been saying. We almost wanted to throw out most improved player. How much does he help this team with their athleticism and their length and all of it?
And because his dimensions, 6'7", long arms, not KD, but KD-like-ish, a great on-ball defender, great help defender, great in steals. But the biggest thing that happened was Russ, to me, I don't believe this nine-game stretch is going to help them. It's going to help the team get through a stretch. Because for me, it gives Russ the confidence to think that he is that guy a couple years ago. And he's not. And when he plays that way, this team is not as good. The reason why this team has been a threat this year, because he has said in his mind, that guy, Paul George, is better than me. I'm going to defer to him. Now, last night, Paul George is 1-9 from three-point range. He's been great shooting it from deep all year. So Russ picked up the slack. And in this last 9 games, when you get into a series, Russ can't fall in love with the three. And there's no one here on this panel can say, I know he won't do that in the playoffs.
No,
what's their record in those nine?
In those nine?
I think they're like 4-6, I believe.
They're four and six in their last ten. I think they're four and five in those nine. Because it also coincided with Paul George. Because he went through an unbelievable stretch. He got dinged and wasn't playing as well.
Yeah, he's got a bad shoulder injury that he's trying to rehab. He's trying to play through it right now in the telecast. Last night, they talked about the difficulty, and he's trying to strengthen his rotator cuff, but he's had problems shooting, and you could see last night the 1-9 from deep.
Here's the reason the stretch is encouraging to me in a different way. I know Russ is going to continue to shoot threes, whether he's 25% or 38%. None of us can sit here and say he won't fall in love with the three. He will. He has this year, last year, he shoots way more threes than he should. The point is, it's one thing to be shooting 6 threes a game at 25%, and it's another thing if he just splits the difference between the first 48 games in the stretch. If he's shooting them at 33%, they don't kill you. They kill you at 25%.
That's probably more realistic.
Right, and so the
problem is, how many is he going to shoot?
Right.
Like, you're sitting here doing it like it's you know something? I got water right here. I'll pour a little bit of this in here. But with Russ, it's always the maximum amount. Like, we know that. When the stage gets bigger, he's going to shoot it. And what he had did in the first half of the basketball season, deferring to Paul George, that's what made this team get in the position. In that stretch, they have not looked good as a team, even though he personally has benefited.
Yeah, I think they're better off and this scoring is a little lower, maybe 23, 24 a game, and he's getting the other guys involved. Look, I do agree with your point that if Houston could knock off Golden State, so that seeding is huge.
Huge.
Then it's wide open, and certainly I'd throw OKC in there and give them a chance.
But until then, we all talk about how all of these teams in the top of the West compare themselves to Golden State. So if OKC is going to face or beat the Warriors, what do they have to do?
I really don't think they can beat them, but, you know, again, their athleticism has to be huge. Russ does have to
be.
You have to get the best of him in everything.
Yes.
Not shooting too much, you know, letting George be the leading scorer, but yet still hot from three. That's what you have to get from Russ.
What you got to get from Russ is better on the defensive end. Last night, Damian Lillard gave him 51, okay? And he is not a great defender going against Steph. So it is not the best matchup when you look at, man, team versus team. Steph can take advantage of who Russ is as a defender. Now, we talked about on the offensive end, when you get in those matchups, he's a better matchup against Houston and Chris Paul at this stage because they're not going to have Chris Paul on the ball and stuff as much. They're not going to have him running around those screens and stuff. Steph is a tough cover for them. So they have to try to figure out some type of way, how are we going to slow down Steph?
So much of this discussion about who is and is not a threat in the West has to deal with what version of Golden State are we actually going to get? Is like, and that's why tonight's game against Denver to me is so intriguing. It's at Oracle. The one seed is on the line. They're coming off a terrible loss. If Golden State shows up tonight, reminds everybody, yeah, there's drama. KD and Draymond, KD and the coach, Boogie's plus one. But guess what? We're still worlds better than everyone else, then this is all probably, aside from Houston, really silliness. But if Golden State tonight, in a big game at home against the team chasing them, doesn't show up, then I think we have to start saying, okay, how vulnerable are they? And in a series where Paul George can't go eye to eye with KD, but he can go as close as almost anybody in basketball, what can they do? We know Oklahoma City has more depth. We know that Golden State's bench has been a killer for them all year. We know that Steven Adams has been a guy that's always irritated Draymond. Like, there are elements that if Golden State is unable to lock in, where Houston's not the only team that can beat them in my eyes. Now, Golden State tonight reminds everybody, guys, guess what? We're fine. Then it's Houston and everybody else is really competing just to lose to
them. Yeah, to me, tonight is a big game. It is a chance to send a message game, but for Golden State, I think Broussard and I, we will speak for, man, we got much confidence in them that they can hit the switch. If they don't do it this Friday, they can do it next Friday, or it could be the first week of the playoffs. But come playoff time, Golden State will have their whole focus on three-peating.
Yeah, I think their biggest focus is staying healthy.
Yeah, how do we get
obviously
through?
They want to get it together a little bit, but stay healthy. And Kerr does have to make that tough decision. They're going to have to figure this out with Boogie. And they brought in Bogut, obviously.
Yes, thing's interesting, right?
Yeah,
but you know, look, that's the only reason they did it, because they see, like everybody else sees, what the deal is with Boogie. Yeah, no question. And we talked about it. I think they might have been better off just bringing him off the bench from the beginning, trying to sell him on, look, the second unit is yours. You're going to get your 15 points a game in that second unit. We're going to run it through.
And Draymond plays better when Boogie's not out there.
Right.
And so then Draymond would get more minutes without him. But they can't go back in time. And now once you make him a starter, sending him to the bench could be one of Kerr's tougher decisions in this tenure as the head coach. It's one of the reasons why this weekend is, because Golden State has OKC coming up as well. This weekend's really interesting.
Yeah. Chris, stick around. Take a break. Coming up, talk LeBron James. Is he still the face of the NBA? That's next on First Things First. FS1 is your destination for the day's best sports shows. Tune in for the big personalities on the big stories. We get you started right here on First Things First. You can catch it on Monday through Friday only on FS1. Back here with Chris Broussard. We're going viral. Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco, spent just one season with the Patriots, and he will be the first to tell you about his below-average numbers with the team. He recently left a $276 tip to indicate the amount of receiving yards he had in New England. How do we know that? Because he literally wrote it on the receipt.
I only had 276 yards with the Patriots, which was really horrible. Chad Johnson's a generous dude, man. Chad Johnson's known to tweet out, I want to go to the movies. Like, I'll buy out the theater for whoever shows up and just buy a few hundred movie tickets for people.
That's nice.
Chad Johnson has a cool post-career, big into FIFA, playing video games with fans. And he always be giving away money, man.
Yeah, he should have invited someone to interpret that playbook for him. Hey, man, what does this mean right here? Go up and run a dig route. When that guy runs a dig route, this guy's going
to
run a post. This guy's got the shallow cross. And then maybe I'll have more than 276 yards because I understand what they was doing.
276
He said, man, this is in Mandarin. How am I going to do this?
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.